Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Hey, welcome back to the Mark Cox Morning Show. It is a Friday. It's the 31st day of January, the last day of January, if you can believe it. The month just seems to have flown by, and so much has happened with the inauguration and everything since. We're still covering the tragedy that's occurred in Washington, D.C. 67 people, of course, lost their lives there. They've recovered the black boxes from both the helicopter and the airplane, so it shouldn't take too long to figure out altitudes and last-minute conversations and things like that to determine where to point the finger of blame here this morning. Obviously, the headlines, if you've watched the network news this morning, is all everyone's all a Twitter and aghast that Donald Trump would say, we're in mourning, we pray for the victims, we're going to get to the bottom of this, and basically we have to hope that it wasn't the DEI hiring practices of Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden that led to this. Well, the headline is Donald Trump blames crash on DEI. And that's not really what he did, but he did bring up the fact that it was a possibility. And we'll explore that a little more this morning. We got Congressman Eric Burleson coming on with us in about an hour. J.J. Carafano from Heritage is going to be on with us. Former Senator Bill Igoe a little later. But with Congressman Burleson specifically, I want to get his take on that, because there is plenty of evidence of DEI hiring and a lowering of standards in the FAA, specifically for air traffic controllers. For that matter, we know the airlines have been doing that, right? And the military's been doing that under the previous administration. We still don't know who was flying the helicopter. They've released two of the three names. I don't have a name of the third person, who was apparently the trainee who was on board the aircraft, and what role that person played in flying the aircraft. Apparently there's a 200-foot ceiling for those helicopters as they're flying along the Potomac in Washington, D.C. The initial reports are the helicopter was 100 feet higher than that. I would still consider that a close call. If a jetliner flies only 100 feet above a helicopter, I would still think that would be a pretty close call. I would think you would want more separation than that between two aircraft.
It seems to me like this was more of an issue of lack of staffing, that they had one person who was trying to do, you know, everything for the helicopter and for the airplane. They had, I guess, normally four people would be sitting in there at one time, and they had two.
Yes.
So to me, that is a big problem. And it sounds like, to some degree, these helicopters are supposed to be able to look around and see if there's any sort of airplane in their path and correct if that's necessary. But someone dropped the ball, and it's hard for me to want to blame the, and I'm not saying Donald Trump is, I'm just making the comment, it's hard for me to want to blame the air traffic controller if they were being told you have to do basically the job of multiple people.
Sure.
By yourself.
They might very well have been overworked. I mean, that possibility exists. But I would not dismiss the fact that staffing might have played some role in it, and we know what the policies were. We've inherited it. Trump does not tread lightly on those things. He just doesn't, and he's taken a lot of grief for it this morning. There's no doubt about that. We'll talk more about that coming up in just a minute, because the criticism is heavy this morning, not the least of which from the people on late night TV last night. And I'm going to get to that in our top stories right now, Carl.
The Mark Cox Shortlist.
pediatric gender medicine for nearly 5 years.
Whoops, I played the wrong bite there. Carl, I apologize for that. I was on the wrong one here. Here we go.
Because he's callous, he's racist, he's sexist, and most of all, he's stupid. He's a deeply stupid man.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel, who hates Donald Trump because of his comments, his truth-telling about what happened in California. Lack of preparation, lack of water. Jimmy Kimmel did not want to hear that, and he's long hated Donald Trump. But last night, he just flat-out called him stupid.
In coordination with American Airlines, we're in coordination very strongly, obviously, with the military. But I think that's not a very smart question. I'm surprised coming from you.
Yeah, and, you know, the president's investigating this. He probably has a little more information than we do. And hopefully we find out shortly what's going on there. He did not like the question from Caitlin Collins.
Parents who have the courage to ensure their children are taught what they feel is right, and those who have the courage of their convictions to go houses of worship, in my book, will never be domestic terrorists.
Kash Patel, his answer there to Senator Josh Hawley yesterday during his confirmation hearing, and Hawley specifically wanted to know, because of what happened here in his home state of Missouri, if parents going to school boards asking tough questions would ever be targeted again by the FBI and investigated for domestic terror. His answer was clearly no.
We are going to ensure, we're going to create our own kind of state ICE program.
The legislation goes on to include enlisting licensed bounty hunters and taking DNA samples from those captured.
How about that? Some reporting last night on new state Senator David Gregory. You know, the media in the state was already up in arms that he had a bill out there that would license bounty hunters to go out and help ICE collect some of these criminal illegal aliens, and that's stuck in the craw of a lot of the groups that have no problem with people breaking into your country or your house and living in the living room for free. Channel 4 did a story on this yesterday that it was just shock and awe. With claims, of course, and you expect these stories to try to tug on the heartstrings of people to make them feel sorry for someone who broke into the country and is not living here legally and has no path to be here legally. But specifically, even though the focus is on criminal aliens, it doesn't matter. They had to go out and find somebody who was the granddaughter of people who came here illegally, so now she's a citizen because of birthright citizenship, but they want you to, you know, she's scared for her family. Well, I know you've been here for a while, but the bottom line is you're still not legal, and it just irritates me when I see this. This is the story. This is how they introed the story last night. Go to 13, Carl, please.
You really cannot decipher who is illegal and who isn't illegal. You cannot look at a person by the way that they dress or their skin tone or if they have an accent.
Immigration crackdowns happening nationwide, including in the Show Me State, where some state senators are looking to make being undocumented a felony. This latest bill bringing mixed reactions across the state.
See, you see the logic of this here, right? Because the focus nationally, Kim, is, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, was whether or not somebody is guilty of anything more than a misdemeanor, civil crime for breaking across the border right now. What Gregory's bill would do would be make it in the state of Missouri a felony to be an illegal alien living in the state of Missouri, at which point police and authorities have a lot more flexibility in how they could respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're suddenly treated as a felon instead of just the waiting for ICE to show up at the door.
You just have to use the analogy of your home, right? If you show up to my front door and you knock and you ring the doorbell like you should and you wait for me to answer and you ask if you can come in and I say yes and that's when you enter, okay. You decide to go through my back door, good luck. You know, that's how you have to treat it. They came in illegally. That is a crime. That should be a criminal charge, not a slap on the wrist with some civil nonsense that, let's be real, are any of these people actually going to pay it?
But you don't understand, because clearly you just have no empathy, Kim. So
I know.
You have to go out and interview somebody who's extended family, at least, is here illegally, according to the story. The way they handled it was very nuanced in the story. They didn't come right out and say they were illegal. They just said her grandparents came here 40 years ago. They came here. Were they legally here? It strikes me that if they immigrated legally, those words would have been used in the story, but they were not, which I found kind of odd. But instead, it's designed to elicit your empathy. Go to cut 15, please.
Jessica tells me the legacy her Mexican heritage brought to St. Louis motivates her to keep fighting for others who want the same American dream she lives every day.
It saddens, you know, my family because it's an injustice and they want everyone to be able to live in peace.
Why don't they go talk to somebody who had their loved one killed by an illegal, like the family of that officer who was killed on the side of Interstate 70.
What's your definition of injustice? Would be my question for her. It's an injustice. Is it really? You got caught. Every criminal might think it's unjust that they got caught for whatever crime they committed, but that is not the case. We knew that was going to happen. We saw it coming. All right, bottom of the hour. We'll get to Nicole Murray and In Other News with Ethan about quarter till. We'll be right back.
If you're feeding a person a crap sandwich with a smile, it's still a crap sandwich.
Yes, indeed, Colonel West. Thank you for those words of wisdom on this Friday morning, and welcome back into the program. I did get a direct message. We just have some of the smartest people in the world who listen to this program. I'll have to give you credit for that. I got a commercial instrument helicopter pilot text me directly this morning, direct message me here, that if you have an interaction between two aircraft, particularly a helicopter and a fixed wing, there needs to be a 500-foot vertical separation. So I don't know what's going to have to be determined here is where the helicopter was. The story right now has it at 300 feet, and how high the airplane would have been on its descent into Reagan at that point. I've not heard that height yet for the plane. I don't know. But what he's telling me here is that under normal operating circumstances, you would want a 500-foot vertical separation between those two aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
If you're telling me the lid for the helicopter is supposed to be 200 feet, then that would mean the airplane would need to be a minimum of 700 feet at that point for there to be a safe separation there. So either the helicopter was a lot higher than we thought, or the plane was a lot lower than we thought. And both of those could be human error. They could be air traffic control errors. There's so many questions here that we just don't know yet. But anyway, I thought that was interesting.
Well, I've seen graphics on the flight pattern. So you have the plane coming in, and it was up to about 33,000 feet. And then, of course, you see it making its descent, and it kind of made a little loop around, which I've seen people comment who have flown out of that airport frequently who have said that that's exactly what we do. You know, just the way that there's just so many helicopters and other aircrafts going out in and out of that airport that's the common loop that they would, like a dip at the bottom that they would make to come in. That'll be interesting when all that information starts to come out.
Well, I'll say it again because it's been an hour. If you're just joining us right now, that the criticism so far of Trump even mentioning the fact that DEI might have played a role in this. What he said was we need to investigate what role it might have played and whether or not we had the very best people on the job. And a year ago, there was a lawsuit filed against the air traffic controllers for that very allegation that diversity hiring practices in the FAA were under scrutiny a long time before this air disaster in Washington. In fact, there was an article put out in this in the Washington Post in February of last year, 1 year ago, saying we haven't had a disaster in 9 years, but we're overdue for one because of understaffing and hiring practices at the FAA, where they've lowered standards to try to get more bodies. That is I'm sorry, that's a recipe for disaster, no matter what industry you're in, right? If you can't pass, whether you're lowering standards to get people into the military. You know, that's what Pete Hegseth testified about at his nomination hearing. He said, I have no problem with women being in the military, but if you're going to be in combat, particularly in infantry, you better have to meet the same standards as the men do, which is hoisting a 200-pound man onto your shoulders and carrying them off the field of battle if they're injured. You need to be able to do certain things physically, and if you lower those standards to where, well, the women don't have to do that, then you're a less effective fighting force. You're not you're not carrying out the mission at that point. So what would that entail with air traffic controllers? Well, in this case, and I know some of you will remember this because I've been around a long time. A long time ago, there was a lawsuit against the St. Louis Fire Department. I remember covering this story. Because it was filed, I believe, by a group of black firefighters. I believe they were black, claiming that the admissions test was biased against them because it was a written test, and they wanted it to be an oral exam because they felt they'd have a better chance of passing. And that was the gist of that at the time. And what happened was, at the end of the day, they did change how that testing was done. Now, was it did it allow people to get into positions at a lower standard? I don't know. That was about standardized testing. But there can be a lot of things that went into this. The allegation with the ATC, the air traffic controllers, was that there used to be a standard test you took. It was called like the STACT, I think it was called. And the guy that sued them got a 100% on that test, but was not hired because they had a quota. And they had reduced the requirements to something called a biographical assessment, so that people that didn't score as highly still had a chance to get in. I don't know. I'm certain this is all information that the Trump administration was aware of. Did it play a role? We'll see. Was it just understaffing? We'll see. Who was flying the military aircraft? We don't really know that all that information yet. So there's a lot of stuff still up in the air. In a few minutes, we'll get to check a business with Nicole Murray. Again, Congressman Eric Burleson coming up at the top of the hour. I'll pick his brain on that and some of the nomination hearings that we saw yesterday. We'll be back in just a minute. Carl, I'm glad you reminded me of that a minute ago. I won't say the context, but we were having a conversation here in the studio about online, about gaming on your phone now, because it's legal in Missouri, and at least one company is now advertising in the area. I've seen them on TV, and they're letting people know that you can now go on and legally gamble on your phone with some of these apps. And I just have to point out, because I'm the one that was saying it ahead of time, all the free money that they're offering you, like $50 to join, it's you get to keep the money no matter what. The minute you join, we give you a $50 credit, $100 credit, whatever those offers are. The way that law was written in Missouri, all of that money that they spend on that gets to be written off of any profits that they make. So they know that you're probably going to have to make more than $50 before you can ever take any of that money out of the system. The House always wins. And at the end of the year, when they go to file their statement with the state on how much money they made, if they offer everybody who joins $50 or $100, you know that person's going to end up losing at some point. All of that money is a write-off. And before they ever have to declare a profit, they can write off all of that as a loss. Which speaks to the fact that when we heard the Wizard of Oz and other people doing commercials for this and saying $100 million is guaranteed to go to state schools, it was crap. There may never be a dollar that goes to state schools. And I'll say it again. I mean, people were completely deceived by that ad in the state of Missouri. Now, it passed anyway, because enough people don't pay attention to what's going on in the world. But I just want to point that out. So when you hear those ads, listen to that. You get $50 bonus. All that money is a write-off for these companies. So against whatever profit, and you know they're going to be profitable. They're just going to try to hide it so they don't have to pay any money to Missouri schools. That just my observation here, my show. I get to make those observations. So there you have it. Aha. Hey, by the way, let's get to business. Nicole Murray is joining us this morning. How are you, Nicole?
Good morning. I'm feeling the week a little bit. I'm grateful it's Friday.
I knew there was going to be a Friday reference there somewhere, because Wednesday you weren't feeling it at all.
Oh, Wednesday, I was a cranky little thing. But we're a little better. We're getting omelets this morning, so that'll cheer me right up.
You're doing better. What are you looking forward to the most when it warms up? Like, you have a trip planned or anything this year that'll cheer you up and you're going to get out and about?
I am actually going to the Philippines in November.
Wow.
Yeah, I have a wedding there, believe it or not.
No kidding.
Yeah, a friend of mine is Filipino. She has family over there. So we're going to go over, do some island hopping as like the bachelorette and then all this wedding prep and whatnot. It should be the trip of a lifetime.
Nice. I've got an aunt and uncle who've spent quite a bit of time in the Philippines, and they've really enjoyed their time there.
I've heard alcohol is very cheap over there.
Yeah, I'll bet a lot of things are. Housekeeping, everything else that you get over there, apparently, according to my aunt and uncle, is pretty reasonably priced. Should be a good time. Good for you.
Thank you very much.
What's going on out there?
All right. So futures are moderately higher. Thursday, the Dow Industrials gained 168. The NASDAQ up 49. The S&P 500 up 31. Stifel Financial Corporation reported nearly $5 billion in revenue in 2024, becoming the best year in the company's 135-year history. The downtown St. Louis-based company said the year ended with a record nearly $5 billion in revenue, up from $4.3 billion in the prior year. The FDA has approved a new type of prescription pain medication for adults to treat moderate to severe acute pain. The drug, called Jurnax and manufactured by the biotech company Vertex Pharmaceuticals, is a non-opioid painkiller. This is the first class of non-opioid pain medication approved to treat moderate to severe acute pain, approved by the FDA in more than 20 years. Retailer Costco Wholesale will increase pay for most of its hourly store workers to more than $30 an hour. That's according to Reuters. The company will increase hourly pay for its top-of-the-scale employees over the next 3 years, with the pay rising by a dollar to $30.20 in the first year and an extra dollar in each subsequent year. Meta is testing a highly requested pause feature with a small group of users on Instagram Reels. The new feature is the latest sign that Meta is looking to capitalize on TikTok's uncertain future in the U.S. Previously, users have only been able to pause videos on Instagram Reels by tapping and holding on their screen. Honda is voluntarily recalling nearly 295,000 Honda and Acura vehicles to update the fuel injection electronic control unit software. Honda said dealers will update the software free of charge. And finally, we've spoken about this before, but I do feel the need to highlight that new data shows that 200 companies in the UK have permanently and now successfully adopted a 4-day work week. And no, employees did not lose any pay when transitioning to a 32-hour work week.
Oh, there's so much I could say about that.
Why not lose money? I mean, I would love to do a 4-day work week. That sounds amazing. But I can't imagine expecting my boss to pay me the same if I'm working fewer hours.
I think it's a little harder for us to translate in our mind just because broadcasting works a little different. But, you know, especially like those assistant jobs, or if you're plugging in data, if you can get the work done in 32 hours versus 40, I am such a huge proponent of why make them come in for 40 hours if they're not working for 40 hours.
Why pay them for 40 hours?
Well, that's what the salary is set at.
I know, but that's what the salary is set at, but then they're suddenly working 32 or whatever.
Well,
I wonder,
it's performance-based, not time-based.
Could be.
Grandfathered in, and then any new employees would get a lower salary?
I mean, I would like to think that companies would do better than that, but, you know.
I could get like 4-10s. I've worked that during COVID. We were partially furloughed. Our whole schedules got messed up, but we had all kinds of combinations.
Yeah.
We had 32-hour weeks, then we had like 4-10s. It was just very bizarre, but even the 4-10s wasn't bad because it's like, well, if you're going to be at work for 8 hours, you might as well stick around for 2 more hours and then get an entire day off.
Yeah, it works.
4-10s.
It works in some industries. It wouldn't work in others, like financial services. If the market's open and you're a financial advisor and the firm has to be open that day, there's just no way to, I don't think you could.
The whole world would have to adapt it.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably
true.
Well,
you just scatter it. I mean, think about a nurse. They often work 3-12s, but you have enough staff members and you just scatter their schedules, stagger them. I'm saying scatter. Stagger is the word I'm looking for. Then you're able to make it work. Because obviously you can't shut a hospital down for a day.
We could close the stock market on Fridays. I'd be okay with that.
Friday or Monday? Would you rather have a 3-day week for Friday or Monday?
I would want to get rid of Mondays because it's just such an awful day.
But then Tuesday would become the new Monday.
Tuesday's almost a worse day because you're Monday and then you're like, oh, it's only Tuesday?
But then all of a sudden it's Wednesday, and it might not be the same mentality.
That's true. Well, we'll see. I don't know. We'll see how our relatives over there in the UK work through that.
They're doing great. That's part of the story.
Nicole's
they're doing great.
Really passionate about a 4-day week.
I know. I am. I get that. We'll see. It's probably coming. Probably nothing we can do about it. It's probably coming down the pike somewhere. Nicole, have a great weekend. Thank you.
You as well. Thank
All
you,
right.
guys.
That's cool. Glad to get her on and get her opinion on that. What I didn't say to her, but that I've said before very often, is I quit caring what the British did in about 1776. They operate on a little different system over there in Europe than we do here. They have a very relaxed attitude about a lot of things, particularly when it comes to work. And I would argue that the system they have set up does not allow people to flourish, to reach their maximum potential like the United States. And one reason is that how successful you are is based on how hard you're willing to work. I believe that. There's no easy way to be successful unless you're just dumb lucky and win the Powerball.
Obviously, there are very ambitious people in Europe, but I feel like the mindset's different. I studied abroad in Belgium and I lived in Brussels for a few months. And yes, people are very hardworking there. In some cases, at least in my field, media, I interned at Reuters. You know, they would work very long hours covering EU summits and things like that. But I feel like there's just a different work-life balance there. There's something about the fact that people want to leisurely take their lunch for an hour or two and... I don't know.
They also eat dinner at 8 o'clock.
Yeah. I think there's just something, though, in America where it's just this mindset of go, 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 go. We always have to achieve. And I think that's why a lot of moms will feel like they're losing a part of themselves if they decide to stay home with their kids. And we just shouldn't have that mindset, because I think the most important job you could do, and I'm not trying to belittle any other job like I would have here in the office, because I love this job, but the most important job you could have is raising your children. And it makes me sad that so many women feel like they've lost a part of themselves, or they're throwing everything away if they decide to say, hey, you know what, I no longer want to pursue my career in whatever they studied. I'd like to be a stay-at-home mom. And that's it. I mean, that's a job in and of itself.
I agree with you. I mean, I think part of that's driven by expenses. There clearly was a time in this country where you could have a single income and still still support your family and have a house and two cars and a vacation at the beach every summer, and in large part, it's hard to do that anymore unless one of those people is making 150 grand a year. I mean, without the two income household, people have to make a commitment to live more simply if they choose to let one person stay home.
Yeah,
they just have to.
No, and I have friends like that who've decided to stay home, and that's a sacrifice you make, as you live a little simpler, and you might not be able to go on the big lavish vacations and things like that. But you know what? Sometimes those people are the happiest. I'm not saying that that's the route my husband and I have gone, but I so respect people who do that, because I think one of the biggest problems here is that we live beyond our means. I mean, look at the credit card debt in our country. Look at all of the debt that we're getting into, because we love to spend. It's like this adrenaline rush, and you get that new purchase, and it's like the iPhone. I mean, they were talking about that on Fox News Radio this morning. It's like they dangle the carrot in front of you and they show you the latest model of the iPhone, and everyone feels like they just have to have the latest model. I could not care less about that.
And you could get it for free if you join this phone company right now and trade in your old model.
Yeah, and then you know what? The fine print commitment is where you're actually screwed.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's always a catch for sure. All right, coming up, we'll get to In Other News with Ethan. Top of the hour, Congressman Eric Burleson, we'll get him on here from D.C. and see what he's thinking about this investigation into the crash and the nomination hearings we've been listening to this week. We'll be back in just a minute.
Happening.
Go, you know the thing.
What the hell is going on?
In other news,
Marianne Faithfull, the singer and actress known for As Tears Go By, passed away at the age of 78 in London. The cause of death was not provided, but as Carl said, I think she smoked like a chimney, so There might be something to do with that.
How old was she?
78.
Oh, wow. Well,
the Rolling Stones wrote that song. She did it first, and then they did it and had her sing on it. And she also did horrible backing vocals for The Memory Remains by Metallica.
I don't think I even remember her. I didn't even recognize that song.
Well, you remember the Rolling Stones version.
Yeah, I do.
We lost somebody else. Dick Button, the legendary figure skater and two-time Olympic champion, passed away at 95. U.S. Figure Skating confirmed his death. Again, no cause of death was immediately released. Button was known for revolutionizing figure skating by introducing athleticism to the sport, including landing the first double axel at the 1948 Olympics and the first triple jump at the 1952 Olympics. He also invented the flying camel spin, which you've seen it 100 times. You just never know what it was called. He won 7 consecutive U.S. championships, 5 world championships, and the 1948 European championship. And after retiring, he became a renowned commentator for ABC Sports.
I know, that's why I know him. I recognize the name.
Yeah, he was on NBC Sports for a long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably covering Olympics and all
that. Well, now like Tara Lipinski. So I feel like he was among the people who would do.
And I heard Brian Boitano talking about him this morning, working with him. So,
Baltimore Ravens kicker Justin Tucker is in a bit of trouble. He's accused of inappropriate behavior at 4 Baltimore area spas between 2012 and 2016, according to the Baltimore Banner. 6 massage therapists alleged Tucker exposed himself and made unwanted contact. Some therapists ended sessions early and refused to even work with him again. Now, Tucker denies the allegations, calling them unequivocally false, while his attorney stated that they are impossible to prove. That's not a good thing to say. The NFL is aware of the claims, and they are investigating.
So, a couple questions there. Number one, if it happened 9 years ago, why is it just now coming to light if all of these people were involved? And number two, did he think he worked for the Patriots? Wasn't it Bill Kraft or Robert Kraft.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Was the one that was accused of that for the Patriots, right?
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, I think he was cleared of all that. Let's just to be clear here, but come on.
WNBA star Angel Reese is teaming up with McDonald's for a special meal launching February 10th. Apparently, it's just a brick in a bag. There's my joke, Carl.
Oh, but
there it is. I told you it was terrible.
Nice.
The Angel Reese special includes a barbecue bacon quarter pounder with cheese featuring a new bold barbecue sauce plus fries and a drink. Reese is the first female athlete to have a McDonald's meal collaboration and called it a dream come true and hopes to inspire young athletes.
Well, maybe she can now afford her rent in Chicago because she's paying about $8,000 a month and doesn't make nearly enough to afford that.
And she was whining about it
because
she wasn't making enough money to meet her rent. I'm sorry.
Wait, from the WNBA. That girl probably rakes in hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions, from endorsements.
And so, she chooses to live in a place that's $8,000 a month and then complains that her salary doesn't support her lifestyle. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Your golden shoes too tight? Like, I don't... Cry me a river, build me a bridge, and get over
that's,
Angel
that's
Reese.
Called the not rookie of the year meal at McDonald's. Sorry.
And finally, Squid Games will return for its 3rd and final season, and it's coming out actually in June 27th. It was filmed back-to-back with season 2. The new season promises more deadly new games. Yeah. And includes one involving a giant gumball machine.
Why do people want to watch that?
The first one wasn't bad. I still haven't watched the second one, though.
Carl, everybody's a cricket. Everybody's a critic. Everybody's a critic. My daughter just texted and said your crickets were late on Ethan's joke.
Well,
I even told him it was coming.
He told me it was coming. And I'm like,
you were even warned, and the crickets were late. So, Ginger says shame on you.
Please get the crickets ready.
All right. Coming up, Congressman Eric Burleson at the top of the hour. We'll be right back.
Get more at 971talk.com.